This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. We have got to get straight into today's talk because I think it is going to be one of the most important episodes talking about science that is affecting our entire planet right now.
I completely agree. What problem are we solving today?
Can you use rocks to store carbon dioxide?
Can you use rocks to store carbon dioxide? This is an extremely important question and problem to solve. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is the fantastic Miss Katrin Steinhorst-Dottis, who is a PhD in geological sciences student right now, who also works at the CarbMin Lab at the University of British Columbia.
Welcome to the show, Katrin.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Well, we are thrilled to have you because we get to talk about rocks. And, you know, I mean, everyone's like, oh, rocks. No, rocks are cool. They're amazing. So
They're my favorite things.
Right. So I want to just jump right into this and say, have you always loved rocks?
I have, actually.
My mom was
always complaining since I was in kindergarten. I always came home with stuffed pockets of rocks. And they went into the washing machine.
Oh, well, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I started loving rocks really early. And then as I grew older, I started looking around. And I'm from Iceland, so we have a lot of volcanoes and earthquakes and glaciers.
Wow.
And it's kind of right there. So I think especially the volcanoes is what sparked my interest.
I can understand that. Yes, I think that would be pretty amazing to live around volcanoes. Inactive ones, of course.
Agreed, especially when you started bringing rocks home as a kindergartner. You know, I teach about geology and the rock cycle at my science museum, but I live in Colorado, so I have to teach about the rocks that happen when volcanoes are nearby, when you just got to go outside and see the difference in rocks. Did you know, were you able to tell right away as a kid that there were different types of rocks outside your house?
It's actually a bit funny because Iceland is 90% one rock type.
Oh!
So it's quite simple when you're still in Ireland. The moment you go abroad, it gets more complicated because there are more different types of rocks.
Okay.
All right, so I have to ask, what is 90% of the rocks on Iceland?
It's a rock called basalt.
Basalt, okay.
Yeah, it forms from volcanoes.
And can you tell us why that one is so important?
So it's really important now because we can store carbon dioxide in it.
Wow, okay.
Which is really exciting.
Okay, I think you just jumped levels in our conversation here from, wow, I had rocks in my pockets and my mom washed them in the washing machine to this rock that is 90% covering Iceland and is, I'm sure, lots of other places in the world can help us solve one of the biggest problems that we have in the world right now.
Exactly. It's so exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
How? I know that's a really big question, but can you just start at the beginning? Like,
yeah,
how does this work?
So, well, the big problem that we're trying to solve is that there's too much CO2 in the atmosphere. That's causing climate change.
Okay.
So we are trying to do something about that. And it's actually a nice way to think about it is you may have heard about the short-term carbon cycle, which is when plants and trees, they photosynthesize, they take up the CO2 from the atmosphere.
Right.
Well, rocks do that naturally as well, and the oceans. So they take up the CO2 and store it in minerals. And that is stable over geological timescales, which is millions of years.
Okay.
So this is quite a natural way of dealing with carbon dioxide. And one of the ways that we at CarbFix, or this one of the technologies that uses this, is that we take the CO2 either directly from the atmosphere or from point source emissions, or like power plants that emit CO2. And we take the CO2 and we dissolve it first in water, forming a type of sparkling water.
Oh, yeah, like our soda, right? Because doesn't soda have, that's carbon dioxide in it. Okay.
Exactly. So then it's basically a sparkling water that we then inject into these basaltic rocks. And what's really important about basaltic rocks is the first one is they have the right composition, which means they have a lot of metals in them.
Right.
Calcium and magnesium. And you maybe know calcium because it's in milk, and magnesium is in avocados, but they also exist in rocks. So when the carbon dioxide comes in contact with these metals, they react and they form a new type of mineral that are called carbonates. They're called carbonates because they contain carbon.
Right.
And this happens relatively quickly, just over a few months. And then they are stable and safe and permanently removed from the atmosphere.
That is just cool.
So then these carbonates never get released from the rocks?
Exactly. So once you have a mineral that's within the rock, it's just stable. And this is also underground, 500 to 2,000 meter depth.
Wow.
So they're just sitting there being safe.
So is the basalt that you're using is under the ground. So do you inject this into the ground, like in a chamber or something?
We inject it via wells. So they're like water wells.
Okay.
So we inject this CO2 water, or the sparkling water, down the wells. And then because it's denser and colder than groundwater, it starts to sink and then it starts to flow.
Oh.
And then once it, in a few months, it has reacted enough with the basaltic rocks and these new minerals form.
Wow.
That is incredible.
I have several questions popping through my head. So
mind blown, right?
When new minerals form in the basaltic rocks, does that mean the rock gets larger, or is it just filling up little openings and vacancies in the rocks themselves?
Good question.
Exactly, the later thing you said. So that's the other great thing about basaltic rocks is they have a lot of porosity, which basically means they have a lot of pores or fractures or little holes.
Right.
So when the CO2 is forming these minerals, they have lots of space to start forming.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm just curious, how did you come up with this idea?
Thank you.
I mean, this kind of sounds like something that you might stumble across accidentally in your backyard, you know, as you're messing around. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a lot more science, but this is pretty ingenious.
That's a good question. They started in 2007. So it's already been going on for a while, this technology. And it started with, this is nature's way of dealing with CO2.
Right.
So they were like, let's learn from what nature's already doing.
Oh.
And they were in Iceland, like, what can we do to help? And they were like, we have a lot of this rock.
Let's use the rocks we have.
Exactly. And it took a while. They first had to do it in the lab. So they're doing experiments.
Right.
And they modeled it in the computers to see what would happen, how long it would take. And then they started first by doing a pilot test. So they just injected a little bit, saw what happened, then inject a little bit more. And now they're doing more and more in new places and with different factors.
Okay.
Wow.
Did all this come from someone noticing that basaltic rocks already had lots of carbonates in them? And then somebody put together, well, hey, if it holds carbonates, can we find basaltic rock that isn't full of carbonates and jam it in there?
Exactly. Yeah.
It sounds like solving a world level problem down on a kid level type of reasoning there's a lot of stuff that's smushed into these rocks. Let's see if we could smush some into that rock over there.
So these carbonate minerals have been known about for a long time. And for example, we have one that was mined in Iceland for microscopes. So, you know, the little glass in the microscope before they could make those. It's actually the minerals called Iceland spar. That's a type of carbonate. Wow. So they use that and they've been mining that from these basaltic rocks. So they've known about it for a long time.
Sometimes the biggest solution can come with the simplest answers, right? Or however you say it the wrong way. But I mean, it's pretty amazing. Now, can you do this? So you're doing this in Iceland. Can you do this other places in the world?
Yeah, exactly. Basaltic rocks are actually the most common rock type on the surface of the earth. They form in really many places, for example, Hawaii, the lava, the volcanoes there, lots of other different volcanic islands. There's also a big part in the US in Washington and Oregon. There's a lot of these rock types. Plus, all of the ocean floor is made of basaltic rocks. So the potential is huge. It's really exciting because we can go to really many different types of places.
Wow. Okay, with that much basaltic rock and in that many different places, I know you just said the potential is huge. How big a solution might this be? You know, our listeners probably don't have, and neither do I, have any idea how much CO2 is actually in the atmosphere right now. But would there be a percentage of how much this solution might be able to remove?
I actually did the calculation a few years ago. And
I love that.
It's these numbers are so big, it's even hard to picture them. But if we would burn all of the fossil fuels that are on Earth, the storage potential is within these basaltic rocks. So even if we do that, which we don't want to do, but even if we would, we could store it all in basaltic rocks.
I mean, that's great news. So then, of course, my next question is, because we know that whenever we're dealing with climate change, whenever there's a cost involved. So is it expensive to do this? Like prohibitively expensive?
That's another great thing about this. It's incredibly cheap. The first test they did was the whole process. So both capturing the CO2, transporting it and storing it was less than $25 US dollars per ton of CO2.
Holy cow.
It's exciting.
That is unbelievably exciting. And
that
listeners,
is.
I wish you could see both Jen and I's face. We usually drop our jaws for something during every episode, and that just happened.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking right now, gas is anywhere from what, $4.50 to $6 or $7? You know, right, we're spending all this as that of fossil fuel. It doesn't seem like it would cost that much more to, you know, offset that. How cool is that?
Exactly. And in many countries, there is now a carbon tax that is more than 25. It depends on countries, but it's between $50 to $60. So this is very feasible. It's exciting.
That is very exciting.
So how much of this is happening around the world right now?
Not a lot. Not yet. But I think it will be happening more and more. There are many different types of storing CO2 that many different companies and researchers are working on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot happening.
Well, so because I know that there's some other ways. So could you actually put some of this in the basaltic rock that's at the bottom of the ocean too? Could you develop a process to do that?
That is really important because we need water to use this technology. And water is scarce in some places of the world where there's drought or deserts or anything. So that's what we're working on now. They've already proven that it works on the lab scale. And we're going to be going this summer to try it outside in a pilot test in Iceland to use seawater instead of fresh water.
When you say to use seawater, will you actually be going out into the ocean and doing this off a boat? Or will you be collecting some seawater, bringing that into a lab to see if it works that way?
The one that we're doing this summer is the first one that we're doing outside. And that is just on the shore. So we just pipe seawater from the ocean and inject it close by. But then maybe in the future, we can start by going further out and doing offshore.
It's very exciting that you're right at the start of all of this and doing these first pilot programs. especially since the early tests are successful and this is working. This is very exciting.
So when you were gathering your rocks and everything, you know, as a kid, kind of how did you get from there to here? Did you always know that you wanted to be a geologist and then end up working with climate change?
No, not at first. It was a little bit of a journey. I always knew that I liked rocks and mountains and hiking and being outside. And I started studying geology. And then I went into volcanology to study volcanoes.
Okay.
That's a really big thing in Iceland. We have a lot of volcanoes and it is really fun to go see volcanic lava flow.
That is on my to-do list. My daughters went to Iceland a couple of years ago and they thought it was so beautiful and so amazing. So hopefully one day.
I started doing that and then I went to Mexico to monitor a volcano there. And that was really fun. But then I learned about this idea that we can try to fight climate change and store CO2 in rocks. And I thought, that is cool. So that's how I ended up here.
Wholeheartedly agree that this is cool because as you were describing that, my brain just took a journey in Miss Cotrin's world of 6-year-old putting rocks in her pocket, which every 6-year-old on the planet can relate to. Through a, nope, I didn't know I wanted to be a geologist all the way growing up. But now that you're a geologist and you're working on your PhD for it, which congratulations there, you're not just sitting in a lab with a little rock hammer chipping off.
No,
like,
you
rock. You're talking about solving a world problem by studying volcanoes. Who doesn't like volcanoes? And doing it potentially by using the bottom of the ocean. You are literally all over the world and helping it all at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
I am very excited for what you do.
So I want to ask you, so tell us about studying volcanoes. I mean, have you been able to see one actually erupting? And tell us what that's like. Not close.
Safely distance away, of course. I've been lucky to go to a few. The most recent one I went to was last summer in Iceland. We call them tourist eruptions. It's when they're really safe. They're not very explosive.
Right.
The lava just slowly flows. And they had last summer, because there were so many people going to see the eruption, they had people that had sulfur meters. So they when there's too much sulfur or the gas in the air. And then they tell people to
move back
a little bit farther away, or if the wind direction changes, because that can be really dangerous. But it's all pretty good. Some people were, you know, just chilling there. Some people were getting married in front of it.
Oh my gosh.
It was a big party.
Now that would be wedding pictures, right? Lava flowing in the back of your wedding pictures. I mean, that would be pretty awesome.
But it's really warm. You can feel it even when you're like quite a few meters away. You can still feel the warmth. It's it's really cozy and nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's liquid rock, right? It has to be really, really hot in order to flow.
This one was 1240 degrees Celsius.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
That's rather warm. Keep a safe distance, people.
So, wow, my mind is going in so many directions. Volcanoes, bottom of the ocean. With your PhD that you're working on right now, is your PhD work and your dissertation around the carbon fixing and the carbon solution, or is it something else?
Yes, exactly. I'm working on how can we store the CO2, but not in basaltic rocks. I actually took a little bit of a turn, and now I'm trying to see if all of this is possible in another type of rock called ultramafic rocks.
Okay.
Which are very similar, but they have more magnesium content.
Oh.
So more of the magnesium metal. So no one has tried to see if this works before. So I'm going to try to answer that question.
Is that having more magnesium, does that make it bond more easily with the carbon dioxide? Is that your theory there?
Exactly. That's the idea. So I'm staying positive. I think it will work, but we have to see.
Are there a lot of ultramafic rocks around the world too?
It's not a very common rock type because these rocks form under the crust.
Okay.
So in the mantle, in the upper mantle. Mm-hmm. And then via plate tectonics, they sometimes get moved and they can be found now on the continents, in the mountains. But the good thing about them is that they're usually found in other locations than the basaltic rocks.
Oh,
so we can go to more places where there isn't basalt. We have maybe some ultramafic rocks.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's a great dissertation. That's a great idea for the PhD. Not that you need me to tell you that, but but it makes sense because what you're trying to do is fill a gap too. I mean, still maintain the idea, but just take it to a place where there's no basalt rock, basaltic rock.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
All PhD support is good support.
Yes, thank you.
So after you are finished with your PhD, is your plan to continue working on this solution?
Yeah, I think I will always now just be trying to work on storing more CO2.
Yeah,
wow. We need more people. So we need everyone involved because it's a big challenge and there's lots of work ahead of us.
Do you think at some point this solution might be able to, like, I'm wondering if regular people could get involved? Would there be some sort of carbonate your water attachment that would come with your house? That I don't know. You know, my first thought was even worse, even more ridiculous. I was like, do you just hang basaltic rocks behind your car as you're driving? And I knew that was ridiculous. But if this is working really well in the lab and you're about to hopefully prove that it works out in the field, out on Earth, with humans doing it, not just a natural process, might this be something that could be made more common?
Yes, is the easy answer. So we need all the different types of people, all the different industries to be involved, because it's not just the geologists. We need the engineers. We need the policymakers. We need everyone to be a part of this. With your idea of attaching the rocks behind the car, it's actually not that crazy. It has been talked about.
What? Really?
I don't think it's really efficient because that's not a lot of CO2 from one car.
No.
You rather want to prioritize the big, like the power plants or where there's a lot of CO2 coming out of. But that's, for example, another group that I work with here at the university. They're using mine waste. So there are different ways and they store CO2 directly from the atmosphere. It's like the interface of the CO2 in the air and the crushed up rocks. They react and form the same carbonate minerals.
Wow.
So there are really many different ways to store CO2.
And the cool thing about this is when you've stored it in the basaltic rock or whatever rocks, it just sits there, right? Like it doesn't, it's not like, say like nuclear waste or something that you have to figure out how to get rid of. It just stays where it is, right?
It's
just
stable, it's safe, it's permanently removed. And the best part, it is totally natural. It's just a natural mineral. So exactly, it's not.
So there's no bad, there's no side effects or anything like that. That's all you're doing is kind of just speeding up nature's process a little bit.
Exactly.
I don't know if this is going to be a silly question. Is there a reason that this process was only found out about 15 years ago in 2007? Is it just one of those natural earth processes that humans hadn't figured out yet?
That's a good question. I think there just weren't that many people talking about storing CO2 before then.
Okay.
There was another way.
Fair.
There's another way of storing CO2 where they inject CO2 in gas form down into depleted oil reserves.
That's what I've heard of.
For a few decades. But that was still just in the 90s. So it's relatively new ideas.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of as people became more aware of climate change is when they started to really kind of investigate ways to do carbon capture, which is just one of the ways that they're getting rid of it.
Because we, of course, need all of the solutions. And we also need to just be more sustainable, reduce greenhouse gas emissions and do everything.
I mean, this sounds like a great plan to me. This is one of those kind of like what Jeff was saying. If you get to the point where you can include like regular people, you know, like us in our homes, I really think a lot of people would get behind this because it is easy. I mean, hopefully it would be easy to do, but the fact that it's just a natural process that doesn't disrupt anything, I think would be very appealing to many.
Yeah, agreed. I think so.
Agreed. So Ms. Cotrin, please keep working very hard and very smart, because I want this to be a news headline that pops up on the internet for me one day.
That would be amazing. Okay, so now we come to the point in the show where we ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. I'm very curious to hear what your challenge is going to be.
Yes. So my challenge is, if people out there can maybe find a basaltic rock.
Ooh.
And it might depend on where you live, but you can go out, go for a walk in your garden or in a garden nearby. You can look at the pebbles that are sometimes put in the paths or on the beach, or maybe someone you know has a rock collection or has been visiting Iceland or Hawaii and has brought back some basaltic rocks. And if you do find a rock that's like gray colored, sometimes a little bit black, you can go really, really close to it. You can pick up the rock and have a peek, maybe use a magnifying glass, and maybe you will see these pores that we were talking about.
Oh,
so you can see the fractures or the little holes, or you will see there are some minerals in them that might be white or green, different colored minerals. So if you do, that'd be pretty cool.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. If you do, take a picture of it, share it with us on our social media. We will show it to Ms. Cotrin here and see what she thinks, whether or not you correctly identified basaltic rock, right?
I like it.
And it's always great. You can always show it to people and ask them, what do you think? Or maybe know a local rock collector that can help you identify them.
Yeah. That sounds
nice.
Fun.
This is going to be fun.
This is going to
All
be
All listeners
fun.
Are going to be outside digging around the ground looking. Miss Cotrin, you do know what you're doing. You're sending our listener kids home with pant pockets full of rocks.
Exactly.
I think you did that on purpose.
That sounds awesome. Well, this has been a fabulous chat today. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Cotrin.
Thank you.
Wow, is my best reaction. What an absolutely fun, interesting and important conversation and discussion we just had about solving one of the biggest problems affecting our entire planet right now, Jen.
It's just amazing that you can do this. It doesn't seem to cost a lot, right? So hopefully there will be many more companies who will avail themselves of this. And so maybe this can become much bigger across the world, and we can make a dent in climate change that's out there now.
Completely agree. And I have a 10-year-old daughter right now who is very into saving the world, recycling, and all types of things like this. When she hears this episode, to find out that scientists are taking a natural process that already happens on the Earth and creating an artificial process to enhance that, to actually improve the world, she is gonna love that and wanna get involved.
Definitely. Everyone should want to get involved.
Agreed. So one of the ways that we can get involved, as Ms. Cotrin talked to us, is going outside in our local areas and looking for those basaltic rocks. We've had plenty of episodes talking rocks and geology, and we love that. We know Ms. Jen has a great book all about it. Get that book, or use a resource like Google. Find out what a basaltic rock is going to look like, what types of rocks are in your area, and see if you can find one.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be fun, because in some areas, basaltic rocks are all over the place. In other areas, they might be a little more difficult to find. So have a lot of fun with this, and then, of course, share it with us on our social media by tagging us. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you really don't know what a basaltic rock looks like, go to our page, solveitforkids.com. We will have pictures of them on this episode page. But we want you to have fun with this and think about all the different ways you can help save our planet.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to see somebody send us a picture of their pockets full of rocks that they're bringing home on this day. Until you do that, you can see us next time on Solve it for kids.